Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Whew. 10 match days down, we are nearly a third of the season in the arrears, and we're only a few match days away from hitting the, well, quite short winter break, as we've hit, essentially, you know, the last month of what has been a very difficult 2020 for a lot of us. But the one thing is certain, that we can still at least enjoy a bit of football. Well, some of us can, not everyone. But anyway, a massive match day of football went ahead, and we will be discussing it as per usual. A part of the team, as usual, to help and assist and provide context for what happened on the weekend's action. Eva Lotte Baller joins once again. Eva, welcome.
Good morning. It's a crazy December with work and uni, so really loving that I can be here this morning.
Yeah, and Bielefeld winning. It truly is a Christmas miracle. Bielefeld winning in December. Who would have thought? But yeah, we're not here to talk about Bielefeld, although it is nice to see them win. We are here to talk about the Zweite Bundesliga and a new member of the top of the table class, and that is Holstein Kiel. It doesn't seem like anyone really wanted to win on the weekend who was playing in the top five. But Kiel was the exception. They were 3-1 winners over VfL Bochum. Three things that are very common in life are death, taxes, and Alexander Mühling scoring from the penalty spot. You could make Tobias Kemper very much equal to that. Mühling opening the scoring, and Simon Soller just moments later getting a goal back for Bochum. But a lightning second half from the host. Finn Bartels getting his first goal since returning to the club. And then Lee Jae-sung, who surprisingly hasn't scored this season, he gets one literally moments afterwards. And it was game, set, and match to the hosts. As mentioned before, it means Kiel go top. Bochum had the chance to go top. They don't do so. And Eva, it seemed like a pretty typical Bochum effort. They beat Hamburg. You know, all is well. They looked really, really good. And then they just couldn't get it together in Kiel.
Yeah, and I think the biggest problem was, especially in the first half, that they didn't use their chances. We had some other games where we spoke about that, but in that game, it was very much visible, and Kiel found a very good way to get the points in reverse. But I thought that both goalkeepers were good, especially Gelius, of course, and Riemann saved that. I think in the last 10 minutes or so, there was this situation where Kiel could have scored like three times in just one situation, and Riemann did a very good job at least securing that. For Bochum, if you compare it to the Monday game, and of course they had now a game on Monday and on Friday, if I'm not mistaken here. And if you compare the two games, you had one game where they were very efficient, used the chances they got very well. Simon Soller had three assists in that game. And in this game, they couldn't really find the back of the net. I think Gerrit Holtmann and Robert Jule were probably the best players for Bochum on the pitch, because they had the most shots on target and crosses. But I thought that Kiel's defending was quite well in general. And yeah, that's why they got all 3 points.
Yeah, it's been an interesting one to look at Kiel this season. Issues they had last season was unstable goalkeeping, inconsistent defense, but their front half and midfield was quite good. This season, the front half and midfield has remained, but we've seen some really good form from Ioannis Gelios, who warranted most of his criticism last season. He made some some pretty horrendous mistakes that cost Kiel points. But he's been fantastic since he's really won the number one mantle in goal. And defensively, they've been very solid. Doesn't matter who they've played in the back four, they've generally been consistent. And that's, yeah, good teams can do that. And that's how you, you know, make a push at promotion. Who knows what Kiel will do. But so far, Oli Werner has, you know, has to be a candidate for coach of the season. I know we're only 10 match days through, but, you know, he's done a fantastic job so far. Let's move on to a team, well, two teams that really needed to get back into winning ways, Hamburg and Hanover. This game was interesting in the sense that despite the fact that Hamburg went down to 10 men, they were still very dangerous. That was when Sonny Kittel was sent off on 25 minutes. But the only goal scored in this game was a Hendrik Weidendt goal. Fortuitous, maybe, but right place, right time. One goal win for Hanover. It breaks a three-game losing streak for them. For Hamburg, it means that they are now winless in their last five. Eva, it's really... Well, the fall, I guess, from Hamburg is starting to become very apparent, quicker than it has been in the last few seasons. But, yeah, they just have completely fallen flat. And they've even managed to, as HSV News English... Twitter mentioned they seem to have been the only team that could break Simon Terodde.
Yeah, although I have to say they were much better in this game than in the last couple of games that they didn't win. I thought on the pitch it more looked like Hannover was one man down than Hamburg. I mean, Hannover can really thank Michael Esser that they not only did not lose it because Michael Ezer was brilliant in goal. 100% saving rate, of course. But he saved two or three shots by Terodde and Duziak, who were probably still the best players on the pitch for Hamburg. Their left side was incredibly good, although they were one man down. I mean, that red card for... It was a second yellow, and I thought it was... unbelievably stupid by Sonny Kittel to do that if you already have a yellow card that early in a game. But yeah, and they created some really great chances, as mentioned. So HSV did that, and they just couldn't put it past it Michael Esser. And yeah, that's probably their biggest fault in that game. It's of course, it's not easier if you first started with five wins in a row and then now you have five games without a win. It's kind of, heaven and hell and back, kind of. And yeah, they really need to break out of that cycle very fast. But I'm after seeing that game, I'm quite I'm confident about that. They're going to change that for Hannover. I was very disappointed by their whole game. I mean, that the only goal came more or less from a corner that ended in front of Khalid Narai's feet. And then Hendrik Weidendt just did his job as a striker and just stood there and could convert it into a goal. But yeah, for me, that weren't really that good in that game. But I really did like Patrick Tumazi, who was very good at set pieces. I think normally Dominic Kaiser does that, but I thought that Tumazi, his set pieces in general are a bit better.
Yeah, that's one thing you do see on Twitter is Hanover fans being a bit annoyed when Kaiser decides that he's going to take the set pieces. Wears the armband, of course, the captain of the club, but... Yeah, no, Tumazi's delivery was very good. And just the situation of just mixing it up a little bit and, you know, giving your strikers an opportunity in those situations. But yeah, I think the thing with Hamburg, they had two or three really, really good chances and all of them stung the some sort of body part of Mikko Esser, who was very good in this game, as the clean sheet suggests. But overall, I guess if you're looking at critically for Hanover, it wasn't pretty at the best of times. They did look like the team that was a man down, but they did win the game, and that is very, very important, especially considering the way they were, well, struggling. And, you know, I can guarantee you there are a number of teams in Germany that, even if they play badly, you know, whether it's, you know, depending on who they play on, if they win, they won't worry about it too much. I can name one, but I'm not going to. Okay, let's move on to our last Group 1 game. And this was the league leaders at the time starting the match day. Greuther Fürth, they went to Heidenheim. This game, you know, Fürth had a lot of opportunities. They had a ton of possession. And they lost. They were beaten 1-0. It means that Heidenheim, you know, get a crucial win in the season. Norman Toyakov was the goal scorer. And yeah, it was a very gritty performance from a Heidenheim side that is slowly, although they haven't been pretty, or they haven't been as nice to watch as they were last season, they're slowly making their way up the table again.
Yeah, I thought they really used that energy and self-confidence from last week's win against HSV. I thought they found a good way to not let Harvard Nielsen have too many dangerous shots. I mean, Harvard Nielsen didn't have a single shot on target, and he's one of the key players for Fürth, of course. Same with the goalkeeper. Julian Green couldn't convert one of his three shots on target into a goal as well. And they were very successful in tackles. If you compare it, they they had 21 successful tackles, which is quite good. And I thought, for example, Manon Busch was a key player for Heidenheim in those situations. There was this one chance by Sebastian Ernst, who was probably one of the better field players in that game, and he blocked that shot very well. Yeah, and for Heidenheim, they could have had a goal in the last minutes or so. Kerschbaumer couldn't put that shot past Burchard. I watched that scene like two or three times, and that shot comes so fast that you can't really see how Burchard managed to block that one. But yeah, I thought if you compare it to the other Fürth games, I was a bit disappointed by their offense in general, but Heidenheim did very well as well.
Yeah, one thing you know is that Frank Schmidt would have conjured up a very stout defensive plan against a team that has been steamrolling the Zweite Bundesliga over the past few weeks. They'd won 5 consecutively before this game. And yeah, it's just one of those things that eventually, like many runs, they'd come to an end. And yeah, just well done to Heidenheim. It means for them, for Frank Schmidt's side, it's their third win in their last 4, and they now move into 7th position ahead of Erzgebirge Aue. There's a logjam of teams on 15 points, and it's crazy to think that from 1st to 9th, only 4 points separates the teams. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we are going to head to Dusseldorf with their massive clash against Darmstadt. An important fixture in the bottom half of the table, which featured two sides that we'd expect to be fighting for promotion. That was Fortuna Düsseldorf and Darmstadt. And yet, they played a 5-goal thriller per se, or really, the scoreboard itself didn't really tell the full story of the game. And it would be that being that Darmstadt for long periods of this game with a better side, yet it was Fortuna Düsseldorf winning on home soil 3-2. No goals in the first half, but the goal party started in the second half, just 5 minutes in, when Serdar Dursun opened the scoring. Ruben Henning scored an excellent free kick to make it 1-1, and then, much like Alexander Mühling, Tobias Kemper scoring from the spot. He scored his last 3 goals from the penalty spot. Kina Karaman scored a fortuitous goal. Well, maybe Marcel Schuhen should have done a lot better. And David Kovnacki, who has had a lot of injuries over his time since being at Dusseldorf, he scored on match day 2, the winner against Würzburger Kickers. he scored the winner again, this time against Darmstadt. Eva, this game was pretty one-sided statistically, but the only stat that matters is the score sheet, and Düsseldorf won that.
Yeah, it's the second time Fortuna Düsseldorf is involved in a five-goal match, although they are the better side in that one. They're much happier with this game, probably. Yeah, as you've mentioned, if you look at the statistics, Fortuna Düsseldorf had 36% possession. And actually, they have an average throughout the season of 43%, which puts them last in the table in that statistic. That's probably one of the reasons why they aren't that successful throughout the season. What the thing was in that game, that they were quite good when they had possession in their counterattacks in this game. Although, as you've mentioned, if you look, I watched the game Friday night in the conference, of course, and I was a bit irritated at the end. I was like, wait, what? Like 3-2 for Darmstadt? I would have imagined if there was one team in the end that could have got all 3 points as Darmstadt, because they always, yeah, they do just put more danger on the pitch. They always seem a bit more efficient. But I think two players were quite good, or maybe three for Düsseldorf, which is Kenan Karaman. He, in the past couple of weeks, he had the chances but didn't really find ways to convert them into goals. This time he only needed two chances to do so. Edgar Pripp was quite good as well. And as you've mentioned, I thought Kastenmeier, he was quite good in goal as well. Yeah, Darmstadt is probably not really happy with that result, because, as you mentioned, they're statistically the better team. They have the best passing accuracy in the league. They had an 87% passing accuracy in 623 passes and 541 completed passes, which is a lot, actually, I think. So they are very, very unhappy with how they lost that game, and I think in the end it's not really deserved.
Yeah, it isn't, but unfortunately they were really subject to their own downfall, in the way that, you know, you look at the second goal in particular, and being very critical of Marcel Schoen, he has to kill the ball. And it doesn't matter if you run through Kenan Karaman, punch the ball clear, do something, because in essence he has a free header and he's not even facing the goal. It's mind-blowing that, you know, he didn't, you know, he was pretty poor in net, I think, Schoen, and that was part of the problem. And where you look at Kastenmeier, the key moment of what really started to swing maybe a little bit of momentum to Düsseldorf was Dursun not being able to score a second goal for himself. Kastenmeier makes a strong save, and then, you know, Düsseldorf equalise and then go on and win. Important for Fortuna. It's their third win in the last five, and they're 14 points for the season. Crazy to think they're only 3 points away from fourth place, which tells you everything you really need to know about the Zweite Bundesliga, how good it is. And now let's head to Paderborn, a team that, you know, prior to last weekend had won 3 games on the bounce, but now they're following that up with 2 consecutive defeats. They were beaten 2-0 at home by Nürnberg. The goal scorers, Robin Hack and Felix Lohkemper. It is actually the second consecutive week that Nürnberg have scored in the 8th minute. Lohkemper getting a goal 4 minutes after half time. There are some talking points in this game. Paderborn had a lot of the ball, and I mean a lot of the ball, the most of the match day, 69%. Didn't matter though, because they couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. It would not be amiss to not talk about the controversy behind the disallowed goal for Paderborn. Sebastian Vassiliadis had scored, but in the build-up, well and truly in the build-up at some stage, there was a handball and the goal was overturned. Eva, I guess we should start there. your impressions on, do you think the VAR got it right in terms of its decision, and your impression on the game itself?
So first of all, I think it was a handball by Dennis Rubini, and that is nothing that you can discuss about. So that at least was a pretty clear handball for me. But we're talking about that the situation was like 20 to 30 seconds before the goal. And there are a lot of other situations that precede that goal directly. And sometimes I think that this rule, it has nothing to do with making the football fairer as it is. I mean, this is always what's being said about the VAR, that it does make it fairer and more fair and in that situation. I don't think it does. Because then you would argue, well, I mean, that's a situation that the referee, or at least the referees on the sideline, should recognize quite well, because it's not that you couldn't see it. Yeah, for me, I can understand that Paderborn players. I think Uwe Hünemeyer posted something about that, saying that it does destroy the way we talk about football and the way that emotions flow, and I would agree with him partly. On the other hand, I don't know if it would have been my team that would get one back, that would concede a goal because of a situation like that. I would probably say, okay, that's what VAR is for. So, no, it's really difficult to look at this in an objective matter. In general, to that game, I would partly, copy what I've said to the Düsseldorf-Darmstadt game, because actually, once again, here the team that had more possession, had the better passing accuracy, was better in dribbling success, so they're better in tackles. So, for example, dribbling success 74% to 33% for Paderborn, tackled 75% to 41%. But at the end, it's Nürnberg who takes the points. It's not like that Paderborn didn't have the chances, but they didn't use them very well. And that's probably, for example, Kai Prüger, who has been one of the key players for Paderborn 2 seasons ago, as well as last season, isn't really on the same level he was before, I think. And they do rely a bit on Dennis Rubini as a key player, but he couldn't really convert his chances. On the other hand, you have Manuel Schäffler, who proves to be a very good addition to Nürnberg's offensive power. He had 2 shots to key passes, so even if he doesn't score himself, he has a very good way on drawing attention to him in a way of in a way from other players. And very, very good signing by Nürnberg, I believe, and for them crucial 2 points and to keep a clean sheet, even if it might be a bit controversial in that matter.
Clean sheets are good, and they defended very well for the majority of the game. I thought they were very tight, and they defended quite deep, which invites the pressure a lot of the time. I thought it was a very good defensive effort. In terms of the decision to disallow what was a very nice goal by Vasiliadis, it's the rule itself. I don't have a problem with the interpretation. To me, it's handball. But the rule itself, and the fact that you can allow, you're coming back to something that happened 20, 30 seconds ago, it's not great. I mean, we've seen some very weird situations. If you look in the Bundesliga a few seasons ago, where Guido Winkmann had blown for half time, and then the VAR had spotted something, and then the players have to come out of the dressing room, and there's a penalty that was given. So we've seen some very weird things in that regard. Yeah, I think the handball rule itself needs a good looking over. And it needs to be fixed, because it's clear, much like in the NFL a few seasons ago, what is a catch, you know, what really dictates handball. And, you know, it's clear that in certain areas of the pitch, handball is probably less looked at than, say, in the penalty box, maybe. But I think that that's something that needs to change. There needs to be continuity, consistency, and if that's the way, if they're going to look for something like that, then that every single game has to be adjudicated exactly the same. Otherwise, we're just, you know, we look like chumps. So let's hope they can get the DFL and the refereeing, the DFB can sort that out. Our last Group 2 game is Osnabrück and Karlsruhe. This game ended 2-1 to the visitors. Osnabrück led for the majority of this game. Timo Biermann got his second goal of the season on 28 minutes. And when it seemed like Osnabrück were going to hold on, Karlsruhe broke them open. Dominik Korte getting his second goal of the campaign. And Philip Hoffmann, who we haven't mentioned for a while in terms of being on the score sheet, he gets goal number 5 of the season. And it's game, set, and match to the visitors. Karlsruhe, you know, continuing a very good run of form. They've won 4 on the bounce, considering they started the season 1 win, 1 draw, and 4 defeats. Either it means that KSC are in the top 5, and it would be fair to say that their form of recent has warranted their position in the table.
Yeah, and I think it's the way they win their games. I mean, it was similar to the game against Paderborn. They use their chances they have very well, I thought, and they have someone in goal who gets better every game, I think. Marius Gersberg was very, very good against Osnabrück. He saved that one. I think it was Luke Ehorst's shot who had a chance to put Osnabrück back in lead, and I thought he was very good. Out of the 6 shots that was coming his way, he saved 5. And in general, I thought it was a very good Karlsruhe performance. They had more possession, really high passing accuracy for them, actually 80%. 15 shots on goal, 4 on target. The thing is, what I thought was quite funny, they drew 21 fouls and they only got 3 yellow cards. It's a bit funny if you look at the statistics. One or two players drawn like 4 or 5 fouls in that game. But yeah, they used that, as we say in Germany, they used their Körperlichkeit, so their body strength very well. And yeah, I thought they found a good way to not let Sebastian Kerk have a lot of reasons to shine in that game. I mean, he had that assist before the Timo Bermann goal, but his crosses weren't really coming to a point where his colleagues or his teammates could convert them into dangerous chances, and especially because they kind of woke up after the Dominik Korte goal, which was a bit too late in my opinion. They maybe deserved the defeat in the end, and we know that Karlsruhe has with Philip Hoffmann, although he didn't really add a lot of reasons to shine before the 89 minutes before his goal, but he's still a very good striker, and Bielefeld knows that. It's a Bielefeld fan, we know that. And yeah, he's always there, and that bounce back, I think, from Kuhn, who can't really push that ball away enough, and then he can score and for very big points for Karlsruhe. And no matter if we speak about them maybe challenging some upper teams, at least it probably means that compared to last season, they're much more earlier in a state of mind where they don't have to think about relegation.
Yeah, I think one thing we haven't touched on is probably Christian Eichner, who, if you try not to go back to when he started, but like this season, they were very slow out of the gate. You know, I remember opening game of the season when they played Hanover, you know, they had their chances in that game and then they gave it away. Poor defensively. And they made a lot of individual mistakes. What is clear in the last 4 games anyway, is that those mistakes have been tidied up. They're much more stable defensively. As you mentioned with Gersbeck, he's been fantastic the last few weeks. And he was very good again against Osnabrück. So that helps, and they're continuing to score. You know, they've got 16 goals in the season. That's the same as the league leaders at the moment, Holstein Kiel. And they're around the mark defensively, equally as good as our Fürth. So positives all around for Kai's say. Osnabrück just, yeah, didn't do enough to push the envelope, especially after they conceded the Karlsruhe's first goal. Let's take our final break, and we are going to head to our Group 3 fixtures. Ooh, this first one, St. Pauli fans, look, well, maybe you might want to mute this section. It's not going to be nice. St. Pauli's game against Braunschweig comes up next. We warned you, St. Pauli fans, but if you've still tuning in, we still appreciate you. But yeah, this may make for some very difficult listening, as the boys in brown have now lost it 4 consecutive games, and it seems a long way away since they last took their only victory, which was a 4-2 win over Heidenheim. 4 points adrift of the team that they were beaten by, Eintracht Braunschweig. The score was 2-1. And despite the fact that they were very quick out of the gate, St. Pauli, Maxi Ditkin getting his second goal within the opening 2 minutes, it would be Braunschweig who would come back. Marcel Barr and Fabio Kaufmann getting the goals to ensure that De Leuven got a crucial 3 points. St. Pauli getting closer to Würzburg, who we'll talk about in a moment. There is not a lot of nice things we can say about St. Pauli at the moment. Defensively, they are disheveled. And in attack, they are just... yeah, it's not happening. And, you know, either there are a number of teams in the top three German leagues that you look at and you're like, they are in all sorts of disarray and you really don't know when they're going to come back. As we reach the first third of the season, you know, St. Pauli are almost in that situation. It's very concerning.
Yeah. I mean, I thought they started off very well with that Ditkin goal, and I thought Rodrigo Salazar had a chance by set piece to make it 2, but yeah, especially in the second half, was not a good performance by them. Normally, their one statistic they're always good in is successful tackles. They lost this time, and which is quite interesting because St. Pauli is actually top of the table in the successful tackle statistic. They won 1,235 tackles. But yeah, this was the game with the worst passing accuracy for the whole match day, with a 64% to 66%. Both teams compared probably have the amount of successful passing than I think Darmstadt had in the game alone. So yeah, then the defending is not good in the second half. I thought Himmelmann didn't have a really good game. Simon Marquignac was only high in numbers when it comes to fouls. He did not have a single shot on goal or on target, obviously, then. And yeah, then Braunschweig is probably one of the teams St. Pauli has to look out for, because they're probably in the mix of kind of, might be one of the teams that will fight not to be in the battle of for relegation in the end, and you have to win those games. I mean, we talked about it at the beginning of the season that it's very worrying that St. Pauli always has to come back from from opponents' leads, and now it's like they take the lead, but then they kind of start playing football, and it's very, very worrying for him. I think Timo Schulz wasn't really happy. He said that after that, I think at Sky or Sportshow, that a lot of players didn't put their maximum on the pitch today. I mean, it's not really surprising, but to hear that, that harsh after a game, probably his fault as well, because he's in the end the coach who has to put his player in a state of mind where they do that. And at the moment, I don't see that happening.
I mean, it's interesting. It's a weird line to tread as a manager, because you know you have to be critical, but at the same time, if it all goes wrong, you are the first that goes. If you're a player that, I mean, this is maybe I don't understand because I'm not a professional footballer or sportsman, athlete. But surely there is enough motivation in the situation. Maybe more than anything, it's a lack of confidence. And that tends to happen when you haven't won since match day two, and you know you've lost four of your last five, but you would think that in terms of getting in this mental frame of mind of okay, you know, every game is a big game now, we need to start picking up points, and they started the game well, as you mentioned, but they just fell away, and there's a couple of teams that once they concede the first, you feel as if it's the game's done. You know, they're unfortunately in that frame where once they concede the first, even though they were up, it almost seemed inevitable they were going to concede again, and eventually they did. Very good win for Braunschweig. They needed that. They've been in a lot of games, you can't help but feel like having Martin Kobylański back and fit and healthy played its part later on in the game. Let's move on to Auer and Regensburg. We know how difficult it is to win at the Erzgebirger Stadion, but Jan Regensburg said, nope, we are going to show you how it's done. And they did so. 2-0 winners in the end. It probably should have been 3. Andreas Albers scored on the 8th minute. He's got 5 goals this season. Max Pashushkov should have made it 2-0, but Martin Manuel made it consecutive games with a penalty save. He almost saved another one, except Sebastian Stolz's effort went underneath the glove and into the back of the net. What does this mean? It means that Regensburg have now won 2 in a row after losing 3 consecutively during the reverse Paderborn operation. For Auer, you know, they'd been unbeaten in the last 4. They missed the opportunity to be in the top 3 with the defeats. It was a good performance from Jan. They were very competent. They created a ton of high-quality chances, and I think maybe the score seemed a little bit flattering if it wasn't for the great goalkeeping of Martin Manuel.
Yeah, I think especially Albion Rinici was one of Regensburg's best players in this game. He had 2 shots on target. I mean, that last shot on target, he should have probably past that to, I don't remember who's coming his way, but he was completely free in front of the goal, so that could have been the third. But yeah, he was quite good in this game. This is actually the first time in over 6 matches that Regensburg could win an hour. And yeah, as you've mentioned, quite flattering for Auer, especially because they didn't use their chances very well. That they, I think especially Florian Krüger had a very big opportunity to score. I mean, Meyer saves it very well, but normally Krüger has the kind of quality to put it in the back of the net anyway. Max Bezoschkov is one of Regensburg's key players in the season as well, so him and Vrnitsy are for me probably Regensburg's best players at the moment. I mean, Albers is very good as well, but just from individual quality, actually Regensburg has now 4 players, I think, who should look out for yellow card suspension, 3, sorry, can't count, with Nachreiner, Weckesser and Vrnitsy, so they have to look out a bit, because it's not that uncommon that Regensburg gets number of yellow cards, because they're the team that draws the most fouls in a game. Yeah, Benno was very, very good in goal, as you've mentioned. I think he saved 5 of the last 8 penalties, or 9 penalties then, if you count the Stolze one as well. And Auer can mainly think Menon in this game that it wasn't a higher defeat.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know Regensburg won't be winning any fair play table championship. As it stands, they are 12th. They've had 24 yellow cards, and that's not even the most in the league. There's a team we're about to talk about in a moment that has that title. That's 31. Yeah, I think if you look at how Regensburg have been playing recently, they've struggled. They got the result last week to break the duck, and this game, yeah, it was pretty flattering. I thought they just didn't manage their chance. Well, they just couldn't create good chances, and when they did, Alexander Meyer was very good. The situation you mentioned, it was Aaron Opoku, who was the man open. Jan-Marc Schneider was in on goal, and he opted to shoot instead of laying the ball off to Opoku, who was unmarked and not a single hour player near him in the 18, which, very poor. But yeah, good result for Jan. What it means, they go back in the top half of the table. Our only just ahead of them on goal difference. Our last game, we mentioned it last week. We penciled it in, so we thought we'd leave it till the last game. The return of Michael Schiele to Würzburg. This was the classic power struggle. He'd been let go after two match days. And he had, as you would probably know if you've watched a lot of American sport, the classic, he's got a chip on his shoulder. Well, it may not have been pretty, but they got the job done for Michael Schiele. That was Sandhausen. 3-2 winners at Würzburg. It wasn't particularly, as I mentioned, not pretty, but vital win nonetheless. It's the first time we've seen Daniel Caterell get on the score sheet since his hat-trick on match day one. He scored twice in this game. Mitja Lotrick got a goal for Würzburg that made it 1-0 at halftime. Ivan Porovic made it 2. Then I guess Caterell got his second to make it 3-1. Daniel Heigler made it 3-2. Very, very interesting. We did see Everton got sent off in this game with a very agricultural tackle on Dennis Diekmeyer. And that was rightfully given red. But an important result, either for Sandhausen, who prior to this game, really, really struggled to get it going. We'd seen the changeover with Uwe Koshinat. A vital win for them, but as we know for Würzburg, it's more of the same for them.
Yeah, Sandhausen can really think Daniel Caterell in that game. I think he was the main reason Sandhausen won this. He had three shots on target, successfully, as you've mentioned, converted them into two goals. As soon as he got the ball, there was always a danger ahead, you could say, not only from him, but I think he has a very good passing game as well. Tafatsova was quite good for Sandhausen because he intercepted four of Würzburg's passes. And yeah, in the end, probably not, as you've mentioned, not the best game for goalkeepers, although Martin Freisel is the best goalkeeper in the Zweite Liga at the moment. He has 53 safe shots. The next goalkeeper that is coming in that table is Marcel Schuhen, so the former Sandhausen keeper with 39. So not only in our perception, but also statistically, he's normally a very good goalkeeper. Thought in especially the second goal for Würzburg didn't look that good, but that's mainly because the defense didn't stand well at that situation. Yeah, very big points for Michael Schiele. You could kind of see a deviled smile at the end. And for Würzburg, I still don't know what to make out of that team. You can clearly see that they do not strut a lot of self-confidence just because they get a new coach nearly every 3 weeks, it seems, and they can't really be sure of what is coming. Then that Everton foul wasn't the only one that could have been awarded a red card, I thought, at least. They do seem, I mean, they were a bit unlucky with referee decisions throughout this season, but in some situations, especially when it comes to tackles and unsuccessful tackles in that matter, they don't give the best impression, I think. It's going to be a couple of tough games until they might recover a bit, and hopefully Felix Magath will not install a new coach as a Christmas present. Yeah, it's kind of worrying for them.
I am still waiting for him to decide it. No one else can do it. It's my job. I'm going to go do it because I'm the best, blah, blah, blah. That's what we're waiting for. It may happen. Their run home into Christmas is Nuremberg, St. Pauli, and then Darmstadt. So that St. Pauli game is very, very interesting because if, say, Würzburg were to win, it would actually be very detrimental for St. Pauli in the sense that they could be even further adrift from the playoffs. But if, of course, Würzburg were to lose, then they would be, could be six or how many points adrift. And that's, well, then you're entering critical time. I mean, again, it's a very unusual season, much like last season, but what is consistent is the fact that they cannot find ways to win games and they don't have continuity. When you don't have continuity, you can't find consistency, and that is something that they have not had, and it shows. It has shown. For Sandhausen, as you mentioned with Michael Schiele, you best believe he would have been absolutely thrilled. Even though he didn't show it, he looked very composed, maybe still a little bit bitter, but he would have been inside. He would have been jumping for joy that he beat his former employers. Before we go, there were some interesting announcements from the DFL around the distribution of TV money starting from the 21-22 season. I know, Eva, you wanted to discuss it. What were the key takeaways from the DFL's announcement?
Yeah, so first of all, which parts of the press conference by Christian Seifert, and then in the end some other members of the whole conference. And I have to say, I was a bit disappointed. I do understand in a way that it's probably not that easy, especially when we speak about the Bundesliga and compared to the Zweite Liga, make everyone happy. That is quite clear to me. But I think the problem is that in the end, you always have a kind of a feeling that the top 4 to 7 are always the one benefiting from those whole decisions. I'm sorry. And for example, there was this whole Rummenigge against the rest of the league kind of stuff. So we talked about a G15. So I think it was 14 Bundesliga clubs and HSV against four other Bundesliga clubs and then parts of the Zweite Liga. And they were all saying that if there is no change in national TV money contribution, then at least talk about what we can do with the international money. So there were things being said like, okay, then let's say 20% of the money that comes in from international business goes to the Zweite Liga clubs, because now they said there's going to be a new distribution, but it means like only a couple of 500,000 euros more for each Zweite Liga club starting next season. So I think we are before around 6 million. Now we have around 6.5 to 7 million for the Zweite Liga clubs. And if you look at it, they put in like a new kind of percentage or kind of thing that you can decide who gets what kind of money, and it makes like 2 or 3% out of the millions that's coming their way, and it's called interest in the clubs. And as Christian Seifert mentions, it doesn't matter whether this interest is creating from the brand you're building or because you play good football, or your merchandising is being sold and something like that. And I thought it's kind of ridiculous, because of course there's automatically more interest in Bundesliga clubs. And I mean, of course you have clubs like St. Pauli and Bochum that create attention, but in the end everything stays the same, because you only get attention if you're successful, and if you're successful you get more money, and it's kind of a vicious cycle. So yeah, I can't put it together words as well as Gary Gray did it. So if you want to check that, make sure to read his tweet about it. He tried to explain those new four categories, which is basically only new labels for those four categories, where it's being decided on. And yeah, I know that, for example, Markus Rehak for Bielefeld was quite disappointed, because we have that five-year decision always being made. So you always look at the after 5 years in the last past 5 years, and of course Bielefeld still counts as a Zweite Liga club in that matter, and it's definitely that way that Zweite Liga clubs do not get any more money in that matter. They do say it's going to be a change in if you have a lot of youngsters in your team, and then it's being measured on how many minutes and percentage from the whole team. It's kind of weird, so go check it out. But yeah, I'm not really happy with that decision.
It's a really weird line that we see the DFL take. It's very hard to, of course, it's very hard to punish teams for winning, which is, you know, this is where the counter arguments begin. The main points here for the Zweite Bundesliga are this, that, you know, from the international TV revenue, you know, only 3-4% of that TV money goes to the Zweite Bundesliga teams. That's not, you know, I get it, but the main one is the guaranteed payments per each club. The Bundesliga clubs will make 24.7 million. Zweite Bundesliga clubs are guaranteed only 6.9 million euros. That's a significant chunk of the pie, especially if you're a team that's gone up. Like, that's vital in a lot of ways, especially for teams that are financially strapped for cash. And you look at teams that could, you know, if they were to, say, succumb to relegation and, you know, have to listen to Eva and I talk about them, you know, they will be in a really difficult financial situation. And, you know, as we've seen with COVID this year, you know, it's kind of exposed everything in that regard. And now we could see, you know, it kind of either further. But the main thing really is to ensure the financial stability and to try and close the gap to make the competition better, and just having the same boring team winning all over again. No one wants that. That's why you're here, maybe. That's it. Podcast done and dusted. Eva, thank you as always for, you know, keeping me in line and co-piloting. Thank you as usual.
It's a highlight of my week.
Someone has to do it, and this is one of many times. Until next week, where we review all the action from match day 11 as we enter the festive season. Everyone have a safe weekend. Hopefully we get some good football, and we'll see you next week. Take care. Goodbye.